Today I'm going to be speaking about the Genja Koan, one of the chapters from the Shibugenzo, the key text of Master Dogen, who was responsible for bringing Soto Zen from China to Japan. And he wrote a number of philosophical and practical pieces which were gathered together in the Shibugenzo. And one of the most important and most famous of these is the Genja Koan, which is translated in this translation as actualizing the fundamental point. Before I start, I wanted to say a little bit about the relationship between practice and study in Zen. In Zen, it's slightly different from in some other traditions. We don't study so we know how to practice. Rather, the studying, the reading of texts, etc., allows us to clarify the experiences of practice. It helps us to place into words or to resonate with ideas that are reflected in the practice that we already take up. So there are things, sometimes you get insights which maybe allow you to see something you didn't see before from reading or hearing what people say. But in the end, these things must always be grounded in the awareness that comes from practice. So having said that, Genja Koan is in some ways Dogen's poetic expression of his understanding of the nature of practice. And it arose partly out of his journey to China, which came partly from a question. He had a question in his mind, which was, if we are already enlightened, why do we need to practice? It was the question that came in his mind, which was the tension that was in the different schools of Buddhism that he studied. And the Genja Koan is, to some extent, an expression of his resolution of that question. And one thing I would say about Dogen is there's a book written by a scholar which has the title Dogen, Mystical Realist. And I think that's quite a good description of Dogen's teachings, in that he is both mystical and poetic in the way he expresses things, but also simultaneously, he is very concrete and practical. He's not someone who encourages us to chase after special states or try to achieve something. His idea of practice is very concrete and practical, but nonetheless, he has poetic imagery which resonates with this. And so what I want to do is, I'm not going to go all the way through it. It's actually very short. This is the whole of the Shobogenzo here, together with commentary. The Genja Koan is, there, that's it. It's 4 pages in total, so it's not a long thing. Not a long thing. So we'll probably do about a third of it today. I want to just look at the first 3 or 4 paragraphs that appear in the Genja Koan. And I'm going to be doing it in one of the ways that is traditionally taught in. There's different styles of teaching in Zen, and one of the ways, textual study ways, where you actually go through line by line, I tell you what it says, and then I give some commentary on it. And that's the way that I want to approach this today. So starting from the beginning. As all things are Buddha Dharma, there is delusion, realization, practice, life, and death, Buddhas and sentient beings. So this is the very first line. And what he's saying is that all of reality, as we live it, is an expression of the Buddha Dharma. And that means that our everyday lives, the things we experience from a Zen point of view, have a reality. So the reality means that we experience disappointment, we experience pleasure, We experience delusion. We experience flashes of awakening and understanding. We experience practice. We are born and we die. And so life as we experienced it has a reality, is the first thing that he says. The next sentence says, as myriad things are without an abiding self, there is no delusion, no realization, no Buddha, no sentient being, no birth, no death. And so here, what he's doing is shifting perspective. So he's not denying the first perspective, but he's saying that that first perspective is not the only perspective. There's another way of looking at the experience of life that we live. And it's a bit like, the image that I like to use is one of those optical illusions that a switch, like sometimes there's the candlestick and the two people kissing is one of those classic things, that sometimes you see it as a candlestick, sometimes you see it as two people kissing. I don't know if you're familiar with that, or a cube that flips. Sometimes it's one way, sometimes it's the other. This is like a kind of flipping of reality. The first reality he expressed is our everyday reality, the one that we tend to experience. But then now what he's saying is, if we look at reality in a different way, we see that there is no intrinsic self in any aspect of reality. We are all interconnected. Everything is interconnected. There's no boundary between self and other. And all the division, creation, splitting reality into pieces is done by our minds to make sense of the world. Effectively, is what he's saying. So there is reality. Things exist. There are things. But then from another perspective, everything is as it is. There is no separation between these things. So that's the first expression that he says. Then he says, the Buddha way is, in essence, leaping clear of abundance and lack. Thus, there is birth and death, delusion and realization, sentient beings and Buddhas. So he's saying there's these two perspectives, the relative perspective, which is that things do exist, the absolute perspective, that when we drop away of our categorizations, there is no separation. There's no fundamental individual self in ourselves or any other self thing. But nonetheless, through practice, we jump beyond these two perspectives on life. So we jump beyond that and jump back into life as it is. And so, basically, nonetheless, despite these two perspectives, we must act in the reality of things as they are. So we experience these different perspectives, but nonetheless react and act in the life that is given to us. And so that means Zen is not about moving out of the relative perspective and dwelling in the absolute. Zen is about embracing both absolute and relative, and then from that position, acting. Letting go of all that arises from trying to discriminate and separate. And then finally, in this paragraph, it says, yet in attachment, blossoms fall, and in aversion, weeds spread. That's saying that despite this, we will live a life where there is disappointment, where in our mind, delusions arise, we become attached to things, and we will suffer, and there will be things that are unpleasant that we experience, which will touch our lives. And so what it's saying is, effectively here, it's saying that you are never truly and ultimately sorted. You never become enlightened so that you don't suffer. What he's saying is that from a Zen point of view, to say that one is enlightened is a nonsensical thing. Rather, we'll say one is not or is enlightened is a nonsensical thing. Instead, what one can say is that awakening, enlightenment, expresses itself through our actions in the world. And that means, nonetheless, despite this, we are relative. We are human beings. We will suffer. We will have good days. We will have bad days. So that's the first paragraph. And then, moving on to the next paragraph, he says, to carry the self forward and illuminate myriad things is delusion. That myriad things come forth and illuminate the self is awakening. So in the first paragraph, he kind of set things up, said that there are different perspectives, the relative perspective and the absolute. The Zen practice is to jump beyond both of these, not to dwell in the absolute, not to get caught up in the relative, to jump beyond both of these and act from a place embracing both. And despite that, we are never truly sorted. awakening expresses itself through us, but nonetheless we are relative human creatures that will suffer in the lives that we live, and we can do the best we can. This now speaks about how we engage with this idea of awakening. To carry the self forward and illuminate myriad things is delusion. What's that saying? What's that saying is that if we project ourself into the world, to carry self forward, and get tangled up in the things around us, the myriad things, so the self projects itself onto all the things in the world, this is delusion. He doesn't say that delusion is wrong, just to be clear. Effectively, earlier on, he's already said that delusion is an inevitable part of the life that we live. So he's not denying that this happens, but he's saying that this is delusion. That myriad things come forth and illuminate the self is awakening. So what he's saying here is that awakening occurs when the self opens up and experiences all the sensations, the perceptions, the experiences, the tastes, the disappointments, the pleasures, the happiness, the sadness of life, and experiences that as it is and allows it to express itself in a wider self. And that is what awakening is. Those who have great realization of delusion are Buddhas. So here, what he's saying here, as I said before, he's rejecting the idea that delusion is fundamentally something to be rejected. It's something that is part of life. Those who have great realization of delusion are Buddhas. That is effectively saying that when we see through the awareness that arises in practice, the mistakes, the errors, the attachments, the pleasures and the pains that we experience in life, as they are, then that is an experience of Buddha. So the experience of Buddha is to realize the many delusions that we have in our lives. And so from a practical point of view, when we practice in meditation, then it means that we see the thoughts arise, and we see those thoughts arising, the emotions arise, we see those emotions arising, and we see those patterns for what they are. We see them not as something that is fundamental to our very being. We see instead that they're something that emerges in us and passes through us. So they're part of our nature, but they're not something that fundamentally defines us in the way that we tend to think. We think that to be free is to, so the Western idea is that to be free is to get and have the things that we desire and to avoid the things that we don't want. To be free is to be able to choose the things that we want and not that we don't want, whether it's a tin of beans or a political party or whatever. But from a Buddhist point of view, freedom is not free to have what we want, but freedom is being able to step beyond wanting. So seeing that wanting as simply part of a game in life that is played. So that's those who have great realization of delusion are Buddhas. Those who are greatly deluded about realization are sentient beings. So he's flipping things here. What he says is that when we practice, there is a risk that we believe we are trying to get something and then that we get it. So that is a delusion about realization. To think either that we are pursuing something and that we haven't got it, or that we're pursuing something and we have got it. And to think that we are realized is, from his point of view, a delusion. So to be deluded about realization means to believe that you have grasped something wholly. And so he says that in that state, you are merely an ordinary being. And so what he's saying here, effectively, is do not be attached to ideas of awakening or realization. Awakening and realization is not something that you get, it's something that is expressed through you. To use the expression of Master Deshimara, it's expressed through you naturally, unconsciously, and automatically. And this is what he says next, Dogen says. He says, when Buddhas are truly Buddhas, they do not necessarily notice that they are Buddhas. So in other words, if you think you're a Buddha, you're not. If you think you're sorted, you're not. So if whenever you think you have something, then that's okay. So maybe you do have something, but let go of the idea that you have something. That might be something that's useful and helpful in your life. Fair enough. But let go of the idea that in some ways you are, in some sense, that you've achieved something that other people haven't achieved. That reminds me a bit of, I think I quoted them before, there was someone said, one of the Zen teachers here, one of the French Zen teachers said that when you get ordained, don't think that that makes you better than other people. It's very important to realise that it doesn't make you better than other people. You must really just experience that at a certain fundamental level, we are all the same as each other. And so even if you have insights, do not think that you are realised. Do not think that you are sorted. So when Buddhas are truly Buddhas, they do not necessarily notice that they are Buddhas. However, they are actualised Buddhas who go on actualising Buddha. And this is key to from Dogen's point of view, awakening is not something that we have or get. It's something that is manifest through us. So it's something that is expressed in the world. It's awakening, enlightenment, realization. It's not something that a person gets, but rather it's something that's always already in the world, and it is our role to manifest it, appropriately in the world. And when we actualize it, when we manifest it, when we realize it in the sense of making it real as opposed to understanding it, when we manifest it, then that is the actualization of Buddha nature in the world. And it is simply something that happens naturally, unconsciously, or automatically, arising out of the awareness that comes from practice. Not something that we need to try hard to do, not something that we need to feel bad about not doing or feel good about doing. It's just something that happens naturally as a consequence of our practice and development of the awareness that we have. I'm going to skip forward one. I'll miss out the next paragraph because I want to come on to what's possibly the most important and famous paragraph. It's about the nature of practice. To study the way of enlightenment is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by a myriad of things. So to study the way, for Dogen, is to study the self. And that means, to, of course, when he says to study the way, that means to practice Zazen. Elsewhere, it's very clear, it means to practice. And to study, so what he's saying is that practice Zazen is to study the self. And there's no doubt about it that through the practice of Zazen, we become more aware of the thoughts, the patterns, the pleasures and pains. We become more aware, both as we sit on the mat and out in our everyday lives, we become more aware of the games that the self plays. We become more aware of who we are, in the sense that the differences we have from others, we become more aware of our strengths, we become more aware of the mind demons that lurk in our minds and cause us suffering and cause suffering for others. So to study the way is to study the self. Next he says, to study the self is to forget the self. And what that means is by becoming more aware of these things have less power. And so in some ways he's saying something that's different from what a psychotherapeutic approach would be. What he's saying is that by being more aware of what goes on in our minds, we do not need to analyse what's going on in our minds. We do not need to understand why we behave in that way or we don't behave that way. We don't need to look back at our parents, our upbringing, or our genetic makeup. That doesn't matter. That's not what's important for now. What's important for now is to be aware of these things. And so, by being aware of these things, it means that we can forget the self. The self gets out of the way to some extent. The self is not as powerful. Our personal self is less of an obstacle to us and to others than it would tend to be otherwise. So the self can get out of the way. We can forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by a myriad of things. And that means effectively that when we sit and the self falls away, then we experience a sense of being, of the self dropping away in a way, and we experience some sense of connection with all things, a sense that there's a dropping away in us and something is revealed which is shared with all beings, all of existence, all of reality. So effectively that's saying that we are made real by all things. When the self falls away, all things affirm our existence. When actualized by myriad things, this is what I just said actually, your body and mind, as well as the body and minds of others, drop away. No trace of enlightenment remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. So there's a sense of one's personal self, one's body and mind dropping away. And what I would say here is this is not something that is a special state that only people who've been practicing for 20 or 30 years realize. It's something that all of us can experience and do experience early on in practice. We even experience it when we see a beautiful sunset. It's something that is not something that's unusual. It's not something that's kind of rare or special. It's something that happens to all of us. It's something that through practice, to quote an American Zen teacher, enlightenment is an accident, but practice makes you more accident prone. So through practice, this experience reveals itself more regularly as a source of inspiration in one's life. And the key thing here is no trace of enlightenment remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. What he's saying, when he says no trace of enlightenment remains, it means it's not something that we need to define and put into words. It's not something that we need to categorize. It's something that just simply is a gentle, natural experience in our lives. And it's something that can flow through our lives and the lives of others. When you first seek Dharma, you imagine you're far away from its environment. At the moment when Dharma is authentically transmitted, you're immediately your original self. So that's kind of saying what I just said. When we start practicing, we think there's something that's a long way off that we need to get. But what Dogen says is actually, you will experience Dharma through authentically transmitted. For him, that means the practice of Zazen. You're immediately your original self. So we immediately... we find self that is behind our chattering mind, which is always already present within us. And we see it, we see glimpses of it. And through those glimpses, we see that actually that self has always already been there and is always there, even when the mind is full and chattering. That self, the original self, which is shared with all beings, the self that is beyond the personal, is always already there and is something that can be a center of inspiration. So I'll stop there. So we'll finish up by chanting the four vows. Shivu Sengan Mo.